It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond, along with our good friend Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, dude?
I'm doing well, Dave. Hope you are. Hopefully the Pirates will be able to get a win tonight against Tulane.
No doubt about it. In fact, we've got, before we forget, we've got two great guests coming up. And so we want to go ahead and mention that, right, Bubba?
Yeah, we do. And we caught up with Ron Clements. Ron's an East Carolina guy. He graduated from East Carolina several years ago and has certainly made a name for himself in the journal, sports journalist business, sports journalism, I should say. And Ron's done a nice job with the Sporting News as well as some others. And so we caught up with him and discussed a variety of topics, East Carolina related and otherwise. And then we also had a first-time guest of the show from the Fear the Wave blog, J.P. Gooderham. J.P. actually lives out in Palo Alto now, but he's a Tulane alum and then also lived in New Orleans for some time before moving out to Palo Alto. So excellent conversation with J.P. about obviously this evening's game and then what Ron Hunter's has going on down in New Orleans. And then also we touched on some football as well as Willie Fritz has done a heck of a job there with Greenways.
No doubt about it, and certainly great to have both those guests. Two great guests, and Bubba, I know that we have we can do a little round table here. We'll get to both guests, but a lot of stuff to talk about, and I think on Pirate Nation's mind tonight, at least a lot of folks, maybe not everybody, is Pirate basketball tonight at 6 o'clock. Williams Arena at Menchie's Coliseum. I'll be there. Want everybody to come out, and I've got a lot of great stuff there, including a kids zone on the second floor of the Coliseum. A lot of stuff to do there as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Pirates looking to snap the three-game skid. This is a game that both of these ball clubs really need. Tulane was off in the midweek, and both are coming in on losing streaks. Tulane's dropped two straight, and then, like I said, the Pirates have dropped three in a row. So I certainly expect to see a competitive game. Hopefully there'll be a nice crowd. I would be a little surprised, unfortunately, if it's what it was the last home game against Tulsa when we had more than 5,300, but hopefully we'll put at least 4,000 to 4,500 in there where it can get loud and make a difference in this ball game. So hopefully Coach Dooley and the guys will get it done.
Well, it's definitely going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Like you said, Bubba, 5,300. It's hard to believe three straight the loss, but Pirates look to bounce back. Tulane is a team that's up and coming with Ron Hunter. And that'll be interesting to see how that. By the way, you told me, and thanks to our good friend Stephen Igo from hoistthecolors.net, I was sad to see that Luster looks like he's out for the rest of the season.
Yep, Edger Luster, 4 to 6 weeks is what they're saying. So obviously 6 weeks would put us in early March. It looks like Edger could be done, just depending on how things turn out there. And that obviously back in December, early December, the decision was made for Luigi DeBoe to have that foot surgery. So now the Pirates are down to one of their 3 7-footers. That's why, obviously, some folks will say, well, Edger Luster, he really isn't contributing that much anyway. And while that is true, he is getting some minutes. And so that means if Charles Coleman gets in foul trouble, you have one less guy on the bench to put in. So while some people wouldn't think it makes a huge difference, it is more impactful than you would think just simply looking at Edger Luster's stat line.
No doubt about it. And, you know, that's the thing is it's a tough situation, tough break, and especially for the kid, and it hurts the program as far as not having an extra body in there. But it's unfortunately, like any other sport, it's part of the game we don't like to talk about, and that's injuries. And then there's things that are unfortunate, other stuff off the court things or off the field things that happen. But this particular case with Luster, I hate it for him personally, and it also hurts the program, but obviously not his fault. And hopefully he will get certainly better. Once it happens. It's kind of like when you lock your keys in the car, you have to just do something about it, right? You can't cry over spilled milk, so to speak. Very sad to see Ruff tip earlier stepping down to care for his dad. He definitely admirable. Appreciate him very much for Ruff and McNeil if folks that don't know, I'm sure if they listen to this podcast, they know who I'm talking about. But he was obviously at Oklahoma under Lincoln Riley, and he's coming back home, and you have to admire and respect Bubba. We've always loved Ruff for many reasons, but doing this, you're very close to your dad and your parents, as I am with my parents, and I know this has to be hard on him, but he definitely made the right decision.
Yeah, and this is the decision you would expect Ruff and McNeil to make, and hate to hear that his dad's not doing very well. I think I saw he's 85, but Ruff is making that decision, like I said, that you would expect him to make, and he's going to help his siblings take care of his father. So I guess Coach Ruff will be back in Lumberton here in the next little bit.
No doubt about it, and we definitely appreciate Coach Ruff and appreciate it. I know there's people that are even saying he should be here at ECU, but I think right now he'll be focused on taking care of his dad. And, you know, it just goes back to show you, Bubba, we always think about our jobs, different things we do. It shows you there's more important things than sports, and that's really hard to say, especially when we do sports podcasts for real. You know what? Very excited for ECU alum and obviously the defensive coordinator. A couple of years ago, David Blackwell, he last year was at ODU, and now he's got a new gig, right, Bubba?
Yeah, he's skipped new defense coordinator down at La Tech. Obviously, Coach Holtz has done a heck of a job there over the last several years, and it's good to see Coach Blackwell land on his feet after back-to-back one-year stints at East Carolina and Old Dominion. And he really did a solid job in both of those stops with the Pirates and the Monarchs, but it was just one of those things where you had a coach that was on the hot seat and also had very little help from the offenses at both of those programs the year that he was there. So it's great to see Coach Blackwell, who I think is a tremendous defensive coordinator, get that opportunity, and hopefully things will go well with the Bulldogs. And they'll continue to take care of business in Conference USA and contend. But this is something that took place a few weeks ago now, but also you have an East Carolina connection at the offensive coordinator, as you have alum and football letter winner Joe Sloan, who had been with Coach Holtz at USF, and then obviously at La Tech. You had Todd Fitch, who is Coach Holtz's offensive coordinator at East Carolina, moving on to Vanderbilt. And then so Joe Sloan was promoted. He had been the co-OC and wide receivers coach. Now he's going to be the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. And then it's worth mentioning who David Blackwell is replacing is former UConn head coach Bob Diaco, who moved on to take the defensive coordinator spot at Purdue.
Great stuff there, and congratulations to David Blackwell and the great state of Louisiana now at La Tech, so that should be great for him. And maybe we can get him on the show. That'll be awesome. Hey, also, how about the, this is great, the ECU alum, Hank Harewood, deputy AD at Winthrop.
Yeah, Hank Harewood is someone that I've had the opportunity to get to know through the years. Hank's a great guy. He's a Greenville native, East Carolina alum, like you mentioned, and he is now the deputy AD down at Winthrop. So basically I think that means that he's second in command behind the AD in that athletic department. Prior to Winthrop, or prior to this position at Winthrop, he'd been assistant AD there at Winthrop. And then prior to that, he had been in compliance at Charlotte with the 49ers. So congratulations to Hank. We'd love to have him on the show sometime.
No doubt about it, and it's great to be here. We're loving to talk about these things here, our round table. We have two great guests we'll get to in just a little bit. How about the, I know that you sent this to me, Bubba, the Navy defensive coordinator turning down the Mississippi State job.
Yep, Navy defensive coordinator Brian Newberry, he was in his first year, and Coach Neo Matalolo had made that change after Navy went 3-10 a year ago. This year, obviously, Malcolm Perry's emergence at quarterback, and then also Coach Newberry coming on board. And they had co-defensive coordinators there at Navy, and Coach Newberry's presence certainly was a critical factor in Navy going from a 3-win team to an 11-win team this year. He had actually come from Kennesaw State, and we'll get to Kennesaw State in just a moment because there's a tie there with Brian Newberry's successor at Kennesaw and someone that the Pirates may get to know very well here in the near future.
No doubt about it. In fact, that'll be really interesting to see. Here's one of the biggest stories we have, Bubba, certainly when it comes to the American Conference, and I guess you could even talk about the Mountain West Conference. Boise State, looking like that they are going to leave the Mountain West Conference. It's been a crazy, definitely a reality show. The old term, school term, would be soap opera. Boise State looks like now reaching out to the Western West Coast Conference and Big Sky as far as other sports. So we might see them leave, and if they leave, it would be great to see them in American, Bubba. I love that. I hope that move happens.
Yeah, and there aren't many schools out there, many programs out there that we would be able to add and bring something to the league as far as boosting our potential TV money, but I certainly think Boise State is one of those. And the deal they were able to strike previously with the Mountain West certainly indicates that as well. So it will be interesting to see where this goes. There was some news reported by C. Austin Cox, who we've had on the program multiple times, saying that Boise State here in the last day or two had reached out to the Big Sky and West Coast conferences about potentially landing their other sports there. So this certainly is something that there seems to be some smoke. And as they say, where there's smoke, there's fire. So it does seem to be gaining some traction and some legs. So do not be surprised if Boise State may be on the move.
Oh, and we know with Troy Calhoun at Air Force. Can you imagine if somehow that the commissioner could get Mike Oresco could get a few of the teams in the Mountain West? It seems like our conference gets rated, or especially when it coaches, they're like the next step to Power Five. So, but if you had somebody like the Air Force and that, I think I've said along, if there was a way that you could add three teams and make it 14 or something like that, would be really good to solidify the conference. But having said that, you don't want to add teams just to add them. And there's certain teams that we've mentioned, and we're not going to name them because I don't want the fan bases to take it as disrespect. But I think the best way to say it is a team like Boise State, BYU, a lot of the teams out west in particular would be the right fit for, I think, the American, because you have teams out there, and that obviously gets more eyeballs, especially in the western part of the country where you don't have more American teams.
Yeah, Boise certainly brings something to the table. Air Force would bring something to the table, maybe like a Colorado State. But there are certainly some options there that would be intriguing if the American is going to expand.
No doubt about it, and we're going to keep our eyes on that story, and obviously we'll have more about that later with J.P. Gooderham, and we'll talk to him about that. Let's talk about some Pirate baseball. That's been a couple ways. By the way, folks, don't forget, here's a promotion for it, 23 Jungle Tales. Bubba's been working really hard behind the scenes, as he always does, but this has been his baby, and kudos to you, my friend. I want to say that on our podcast. You've been working really hard, as you always do, but this particular project, you've outdone yourself, and we've had a lot of great former players for ECU baseball, and this week has been great so far, starting on Wednesday, and it'll be for the next 23 days, at 23, of course, for Keith LeClair, not for Michael Jordan, and the next 23 days we'll have talk of different baseball players. I know, Bubba, you've been working hard to line up some more. We got a lot of great surprises over the next few weeks.
Yeah, we really do. We had so much success with the 50 Pirates and 50 Days series that we did last summer. Got a lot of positive feedback about that, and there's always so much excitement leading into opening day for ECU baseball, but this is something we thought would go over well, and it's off to a pretty good start for sure. Started things off with Trent Whitehead. That episode has already received more than 100 listens, and this is a SoundCloud exclusive, so if you're trying to listen the way you typically listen on another platform like Apple Podcasts or Google Play Music, this is a SoundCloud exclusive, so definitely follow us on SoundCloud. That way, anytime we post a new episode, you will be alerted. But in addition to Trent, we caught up with Harrison Eldridge, Ryan Ross, the former left-handed pitcher from a couple seasons ago, and also Kyron Madison, back from the Keith LeClair era. So already talked to those four. And like you said, we will have 23 interviews 23 Jungle Tales over the next several weeks. But that's what in the next few we'll catch up with the likes of ones that are extremely familiar and fresh in the minds of folks, and guys like Turner Brown, Bryant Packard, and then also a guy from a little over a decade ago, T.J. Hose, that played for Randy Mazie and also Billy Godwin.
Going to be great stuff, and we'll have our baseball preview as well, so we'll be doing that here pretty soon.
So, yeah, in addition to those guys that I just mentioned, so we'll be catching up with guys from recent eras, and then also guys going back to the days of Coach Gary Overton, Hal Baird, and others. Remember to check that out. You can hear all 23 of those on SoundCloud.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and Bubba, I know that people are definitely getting ready for the season as we start Valentine's Day, February the 14th. Cannot wait for that. The season opener against William & Mary should be fantastic. Get your season tickets, by the way, folks. ECUPirates.com, 1-800-DIAL-ECU. And I know at this point, I don't think there's any baseball tickets for the banquet coming up on for next Saturday the 1st. So I think you may be out of luck unless you get somebody to give you a ticket. Definitely that's going to be a lot of fun next Saturday night at the Rec Center. I'm sorry, not the Rec, the new Student Center, I meant to say, for sure. You ready to go to our first guest, Bubba?
Yeah, let's catch up with J.P. Gooderham from the Fear of the Wave blog, and we'll go to him now, and we talked a variety of topics, obviously tonight's ball game, but then also a little Tulane football and conference expansion.
Well, there's a big game coming up on Saturday night, Bubba. Looking forward to it. 6 o'clock at Menchie's Coliseum, Williams Arena. And our next guest knows a little bit about the opponent, right?
Yeah, the Green Wave will be coming to Menchie's, like you said. And then to break down the Tulane, or give us the Tulane perspective, J.P. Gooderham from the Fear the Wave blog. J.P., welcome in.
Guys, really glad to be here talking to Tulane basketball. And like you said, I think a really interesting game, both for East Carolina and for Tulane as well.
Absolutely. In fact, these two teams, the good news for both of these programs, JP, is it looks like we guys, with having a new coach and then Joe Dooley coming in last year, it looks like both Tulane basketball and with East Carolina basketball, that there is a bright future, where before it seemed like we were fighting out who's going to be the cellar dweller.
Yeah, you know, I think one thing that's a little similar about both these teams is you have two coaches who are new to the program. Obviously, Dooley's in his second year. For Tulane, if anyone hasn't watched much of the Green Wave this year, Ron Hunter is the new Tulane coach. He's in his first year. He inherits a team that won zero games in the AAC last season. In fact, I think ECU won three games, and two of them were over Tulane. I mean, we were rock bottom bad. And, you know, they made a move. They brought in Ron Hunter, who, you know, probably a lot of college basketball fans recognize from his time as the coach at Georgia State, when he went viral, when I think they won in the round of 32 and he fell off his stool and everything. And he is an electric guy. You know what I mean? If you listen to him talk about the program and what he wants to do, Tulane was predicted to be the worst team in the AAC coming into this year, and the New Orleans media asked him about that. They said in his opening conference, they're like, you're predicted to be the worst team, and he goes off, and he's like, I guarantee you Tulane will not be the worst team. And you know what? You know, I think like ECU, they've had a couple of nice wins this season, namely both Cincinnati and Temple. The consistency hasn't always been there, but they've shown so much more competitiveness.
Yeah, taking a look at Tulane, and they've certainly been a lot more competitive. Off to that 7-1 start, a win over Utah out of the Pac-12. Obviously, only 3-7 since, but did have wins over Cincinnati down in New Orleans, and then also by 14 over Temple in Philly. So, talk a little bit about the start of the conference play.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because this team has 9 newcomers. So, in addition to having a new coach, Tulane basically had the whole team transfer last year, and, you know, it wasn't a very good team, so you have no one coming back. And really, that's afforded Coach Hunter an opportunity to bring in a lot of transfers from high-major programs. Some examples would be like K.J. Lawson, who was formerly at Kansas. He was at Memphis before that. We have a transfer from Arkansas, from Georgia. I mean, he's really targeted some guys like that who have shown talent at these other programs. Looking at the start of conference play, I mean, they really came out and I think started pretty impressively by having a very competitive game on the road against Memphis, following it up with a win over Cincinnati, then also beating Temple on the road. I would say our feelings, you know, at least for me, were riding pretty high at that moment. Since then, they've had two really kind of the first clunkers of the season. They got blown out against UCF who at home, who had not been very good to that point. And then they also were not very competitive against a pretty solid but not phenomenal Tulsa team. I would argue that this East Carolina game is actually like a really interesting test for the team. You know, like you said, I agree. I think ECU is likewise showing some competitiveness this year. You're on the road playing at East Carolina. I think, you know, to show that we're still making strides, this is a game where you really want to see Tulane show up and take one, and I think that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, and as you look at this matchup, one of the things that really jumped out at me, the Pirates have not shot the three very well, just 28%. But then you look at Tulane, Tulane's approaching 36%, and they have four guys on the roster that have knocked down at least 21 threes. And so talk a little bit about that aspect of the Tulane game.
Yeah, great question. So I like the Ken Pomeroy stats, and he actually ranks Tulane as the number 64 team in the country in three-point shooting. It's a huge asset. You know, this is a team that really looks to score a lot around the perimeter, and I would say in any of these games where Tulane is finding success, you can look at the stats and see that they're doing a good job. You know, it's a good night for them shooting. The challenge is there's not a ton of size and there's not a ton of interior scoring or guys who can really go into the paint and make something happen. And in addition to that, they've struggled against some bigger teams like UConn who have done a much better job rebounding. And so I would agree with your assessment right off the top. I think, you know, the three-point shooting is a really big part of this team this year based on where the skill sets are.
So here lately, despite I mentioned that 36% or right at it for the season, that's what here lately, though, in those two losses to UCF and Tulsa, the Green Wave has just been 12 out of 47. So it will be interesting to see which Tulane team shows up on Saturday night in Menchie's. But you mentioned KJ Lawson. Let's talk a little bit more about him. I know he scored in double figures, something like 14 or 15 out of the Green Wave's 18 ball games up to this point. 14 points, almost 6 rebounds, and the game that he had against Temple really jumped out at me. 16 points, 10 rebounds, and then also 6 assists and 6 steals.
It's pretty cool, actually, because you look at his career, you know, he starts as a 4-star prospect at Memphis. They go through a coaching change. He ends up leaving his hometown team, who are the Tigers. He goes to Kansas, doesn't really work out that way there. And he's really emerged as a mission-critical player, just like you said, for Tulane. And he does a lot of things really well. I would say when he's scoring, I mean, that is such a big difference because he's had a few games where he's been in the zone like that. I agree, Temple's a great example where Tulane was out ahead of Temple the entire time. KJ was a huge part of that. And the Memphis game, which was at Memphis, was a loss. But Tulane really brought that one. I think it was still within a score or two within the last, you know, minute and a half or so. And again, KJ Lawson in the second half was hitting everything and I think just showing a lot of effectiveness as a player. So he's definitely a huge part of the team, you know, as a guy who when he gets hot, it's going to be a big deal. Some other guys like that are probably Christian Thompson and Tashaun Hightower, who are also both newcomers. But the reality is there's a lot of guys in this team who can get hot, which has been an asset this year to knock off some of these better teams.
You mentioned Hightower and Thompson. Hightower actually leads the team just over 16 points a game, and then Thompson about 12.5 per game. And those two guys really get to the charity stripe a lot. They've combined to shoot a little over 200 free throws already.
I think if you want to circle what is one of the, you know, Tulane, if you look at the best ones they've had this season in conference, it's been Cincinnati and Temple. Out of conference, it's probably Utah, who you know, has been a pretty solid team this year. And if you're like, well, why has Tulane been able to do this? I think one of the things that I really like about what Ron Hunter has done so far is this team gets the line a lot. Noble Days is another guy that I would circle who he gets more charges than like anybody who I see. You know what I mean? He's a guy who's willing to take that and do what he needs to do to make the team successful. And they're typically shooting well once they get to the line. And if you want to be a team that wins games in a conference like the AAC, and you're trying to make up an experience disadvantage, maybe something of a talent disadvantage, you got to do the little things well. And I think, number one, the success of the free throw line and also the ability to generate turnovers, they're top 20 according to KenPom, in generating turnovers. Those are two things that, you know, if a team like Temple doesn't come correct, they can end up having a really tough night against Tulane. And that's certainly something we hope to see as Green Wave fans.
And JP, you created a nice segue for me. You talk about the Green Wave's tendency to, or ability to force turnovers. That's something that East Carolina's had an issue with at times this year. Some games they've been pretty good limiting the turnovers to about 10 a game, and then some they've been up there approaching 20. So, and that's something to really keep an eye on, something I have circled for Saturday's game. East Carolina's turned it over 20 times more than the opponent, and meanwhile, like you said, the Green Wave have forced 87 more turnovers than they've committed.
That's probably the biggest thing that I'm looking at is as something that could be a difference maker in favor of Tulane. And like you said, I think there have been games where ECU's done a good job, you know, playing good disciplined basketball. But at the same time, they're ranked about 205th in turnovers in college basketball, so a little below average, especially for the AAC. And yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely something we want to see is that Tulane is playing with some intensity on the road right away. They're not getting into a big hole. And especially if they're forcing ECU to make mistakes at home, that's definitely a factor that I think Tulane fans should want to see for this game.
Yeah, JP, I was going to ask you a question along the lines of going back to Ron Hunter real quick. What, you know, some Pirate fans for a previous coach we had in football didn't think coaching mattered. But coaching does matter. And I was going to ask you with him, what makes Ron Hunter so special?
I think there's two. That's an awesome question, man. And I agree with you. I think coaching really does matter. You know what I mean? I don't know where you guys – I think you guys have a good coach coming in here, but, you know, on the football side. But it's like that with Ruffin, man. It's like you had a good thing going. And I can remember back to, you know, Tulane going to triple overtime against Shane Carden and everything. I mean, ECU had some really cool teams. And if you have the wrong guy in place, it can really change the complexion of a program. And that's really what's happened for Tulane, I think, is that if you look at the coaches that Tulane has hired, because they were, you know, just a little history, Tulane went to the NCAA tournament twice in the 1990s. And since then, it's been a total dead zone. And every coach who's come through has failed at taking Tulane back to, you know, the top of either Conference USA or the AEC. I think the reason why people have optimism for Ron Hunter is number one, I think that he is somebody who has done this before. He took IUPUI to their first NCAA tournament. He took Georgia State to their first NCAA tournament. He's a coach who has shown the ability to elevate a program. I think that even looking at this year, when no one expected anything from this team, myself included, seeing them beat teams like Cincinnati and Temple is deeply meaningful. And it's shown that he is a guy who's going to target players who can win now. He went out and got those transfers, and he was able to have a vision of how they were going to play together. And the second thing real quick that I really like about Ron Hunter is that he does not accept the culture that was there. You know what I mean?
Right.
When that reporter said, you guys are bad and you're going to be bad this year, there's a lot of Tulane coaches, I've been in those press conferences, who would say, you know, we're going to really change things around here. It's going to take some time. Ron Hunter didn't say that. He said, I'm going to figure out a way to win now. And that level of energy and just having the accountability is really exciting. And I think we have it on the football side with Willie Fritz right now. And I you know, I've been burned before, but I believe in Ron Hunter, and I think it's eventually going to come in Tulane basketball.
And, you know, Bubba, I was going to say, JP, Bubba actually, I remember when Ron Hunter was hired, and Bubba and I were talking. He said, you know, that's an excellent hire. And I said, I agree with you. Especially for Tulane basketball, I was like, that's, you know, that's the great thing about this league, JP, is the very fact, night in and night out, I was talking to some folks last week, and I said, the American is such a good basketball league, you can't just say, oh, we have East Carolina tonight, we have Tulane tonight, or fill in the blank, whatever school in the American, because you better be ready every conference game now, or it's going to be potentially an L.
I think that's one of the things that's changing. You know, when you look at the overall complexion of it, I agree wholeheartedly, right? And obviously there's some people, especially on the UConn side, who are like, well, we're losing this, you know, team that has gone to the very top of the sport. And that's true, right? But I also think one thing that's changing is what kind of happened in AAC football, where you had teams that were bad, you know, and let's call a spade here. When Tulane entered the AAC in football, Tulane was not a good football team, and they brought down the overall competitive level of the league. But what happened was you saw a commitment into spending money on every level, whether that's organizationally, at the administrative level, or on bringing in coaches who had experience. And I think in basketball, you know, Tulane and ECU have been two teams that have been doormats, and both of those teams have shown that they're capable of beating the higher level teams in the league this year. And if they can continue on that upward trajectory, I think that's a really strong thing for the league overall. And so I think that, you know, whether for ECU folks with Dooley or for Tulane folks with Hunter, when you get a coach who has head coach experience, you know, it's not just another assistant, you know, coming from Ohio State and you know, maybe they're going to work out, but somebody who has experience like that, I think it's really meaningful, and it's something that sets the AEC apart from the mid-majors and some other leagues.
Absolutely, because Ron Hunter, not only did he have that head coaching experience, but in addition to what he had done at Georgia State, he had, 15-plus years at IUPUI where he had done so well. So, and I remember, I guess, maybe it was Georgia Tech or somebody. I remember watching IUPUI upset someone when he was at guiding those guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think the thing that I always look at, and they did this with Fritz and they did this with Hunter, when people are like, that guy shouldn't have gone there. You know, when they accept the job for Tulane or wherever else, and you know, there's some people in the national media and they're like, wow, I really thought they would go higher. You know, to me, that tells you your AD and your athletics department is doing a good job. You know what I mean? And they looked at Ron Hunter, who was in, he had a long, really good career with Georgia State. They were in the NCAA tournament last year, but as a Sun Belt program, they weren't going to be able to, from a resource perspective and everything else, take that next step. I like Ron Hunter because he took a job that, you know, there's some folks out there who say was an unwinnable situation. And if he does this successfully, he's going to be winning in, you know, a power type league. And I think that's a really big credit to him as a coach, that he's willing to roll the dice a little bit, but also that he believes in himself and what he does to go into a league like the AAC where every team can beat you.
JP, kind of shifting gears a bit, I know you're out in California, so talk a little bit about, I know you're an avid golfer. Have you had the opportunity to play some of those tremendous courses around there, like whether it's Pebble Beach or the others there along the 17-mile drive?
Man, oh man, dude, okay, you're speaking my language right now. So I've recently got back into golf. I'd stopped for a really long time. When I was at Tulane, this will shock you, but I was busy doing some other things in New Orleans that a city like that can offer. But no, California, I'm in Northern California, and I was not expecting, you know, much, because I'd never really been out here before. I'm not from here. But, you know, there's some really good golf, and I haven't played Pebble Beach yet, but I've done a couple courses in that area and a couple other courses in the state that are on the ocean. And man, that is really cool. Although I got to say, I love golfing in the Carolinas too, man. And, you know, there's some really cool, I like traveling a little bit and getting to play different places. So it's a lot of fun.
JP, I was going to say, for Pebble Beach and like Pinehurst number 2 and Augusta, you have to have some kahunas to play there. I just can't imagine. I've actually been about threatened to be kicked off a golf course before, not because of my behavior, but my play is so bad that I'm not even ready for prime time. I mean, it's not even my golf game. If I could ever get below 100, I would be doing something.
Yeah, I mean, it can break you, man. It's crazy. You have days, I don't know. I golf obviously is different because no one's going to hit you. You know, generally speaking, you're not going to get tackled on the course. But it's wild when you can show up one day and all of a sudden it's like you forget everything you've ever done. You know what I mean? And I just don't have that experience when I'm like shooting hoops or going running or something like that. So I think they say it's a mental test, but yeah, man, those courses like Pinehurst too, you're spending so much money at that point that you better have a good day, because that's a real commitment.
JP, something else I wanted to add is, that's what obviously we enjoy having you on as a guest of the show, but maybe we need to seek your help. I saw where you were part of how to create a successful private podcast, so maybe we need your suggestions there.
Yeah, I mean, we do I've kind of taken a new project on where what we do, because I'm a podcaster myself, I have Fear the Wavecast, and I really like what you guys do, and honestly I think there's a lot of really cool people in the AEC, across the AEC, who have some awesome podcasts, you know, and I've always really believed in the format. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how you guys listen, but anytime I'm driving, I just, you know, I plug in the phone and I'm listening, and that's so much more interesting to me than putting on the radio or something else. So what we're kind of doing as a project that I'm working on is working with like companies, and we work with them nationwide basically and help them launch podcasts for their employees. So if you imagine, you know, I don't know what you guys do, but a lot of jobs, you know, you might get a big training or a long email that's boring and that you don't want to do. We help companies turn that kind of thing into a podcast that people can listen to. So I'm always down to chat about that as well.
That's fantastic. In fact, as a matter of fact, we actually, March the 1st, JP, is 2 years we've been, I would say, on the air, but our podcast has been in existence, and we have a lot of people in Pirate Nation. In fact, we're still the only podcast for East Carolina sports unofficially. We're not obviously commissioned by the university or have any ties to the university, even though that's the university we love. And then we branch out to other sports and other topics and different things when it comes to famous athletes, different things we do. So it's turned out great, and we're very fortunate and blessed that it just shows another thing, JP, it shows the how great the fan bases are, very underrated in America.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, there's and even some schools too, from me being a Tulane fan for a long time, who I used to really not like. You know, it's kind of I'm not going to say that social media is a good thing for people, but it is kind of fun. Like, I really didn't like. I'll give you an example. You know, Tulane and Houston had a little bad blood going back to the Conference USA days, and there was one play that was a pretty dirty hit in our quarterback. And you know, you walk away from that, and you're like, man, I really don't like those people. And then you interact with them online, you know what I mean? And you kind of make, you know, you kind of make some connections there. And I think the AAC has a lot of pretty fun fan bases to interact with. I even have, you know, UCF has grown on me a little bit, which I didn't expect to happen.
Whoa, wait a minute. UCF? Really?
I'm not saying all of them, but I've got a couple people, because I do a lot of UCF. If anyone follows me on Twitter, I do a lot of jokes about UCF. And a few of them started taking it in stride. And I really appreciated that. So anything can happen. That's all I'm saying.
Well, Jeff Allen actually is a friend. I know yours and ours too. So I know that UCF is big for him. I was just giving you a hard time.
No, I feel the same way, man.
Good stuff there. As far as we were talking about the as far as basketball is concerned, tournament wise, you feeling good about? I know we were talking to Rich Phillips of SMU. Yesterday, he feels like three teams. How many teams do you think the American will get as far as the big dance?
Yeah, probably the baseline. You know, three probably seems like a good number to start with. I think the challenge this year is I was looking at the net rankings, and there's a lot of teams who have taken some tough losses that are going to weigh them down this year. You know, with that being said, that's obviously not a crazy number of teams for the AAC to send. And I think that, you know, in a couple of years here, if things keep trending, for some of the programs, you know, you can definitely see more as a multi-bid league. The one thing that I think is really positive is seeing how good Wichita has been this season. I think has been really strong. You know, they kind of did the transition to the AAC, and it wasn't, you know, their best version of what I think Wichita basketball could be. And I think you look at some of the non-conference wins they have, like Oklahoma, and they're really strong. You know what I mean? And so I think that's a good thing for the league. And then I think, you know, teams like Cincinnati and maybe even SMU, we'll see what happens with their program, should probably be going in the right direction in a couple of years after they settle in. So yeah, I'd agree with you. That's about where my head's at.
I was going to ask, as far as football, if you have a moment, one of the big news, certainly rumors we're hearing about, is Boise State. Do you have any feelings on that? Do you know anything there about potentially Boise State? The rumor we heard earlier in the week, maybe the weekend was, last weekend, was Boise State and BYU.
Hey,
have you heard any more on that?
Dave, sorry to interrupt, guys, but I did see news today on that as far as Boise State filed a lawsuit against the Mountain West. From what I saw, that was legit.
Okay. Wow. I haven't seen that yet, but that's about the TV contract. They didn't want to Mountain West didn't want them to allow them to do their own separate TV contract. So that might be a break for the American.
It's funny you bring that up. Before I jumped on here, you texted me that, you know, we were ready to go, And I was like seriously typing to finish. I just put up a blog post on our Fear the Wave Twitter. But yeah, deep diving this Boise situation, and you hit the nail on the head. The really big news, you know, and just to back up for anyone who doesn't follow conference realignment business super closely, but the high level idea is that for years, the Mountain West Conference has given Boise a sweetheart deal where they make a lot more money, I think to the tune of about $2 million more dollars than every other league and every other team in the league. You know what I mean? It's like if after UCF had had that really good run and UCF had said, you know, maybe we'll go independent, if all of us had said, well, we'll give you some special privileges, and that's not going to end well. You know what I mean? Eventually you're going to have different ADs and different leadership. And this has really come to a T because the Mountain West commissioner last week said, you know, we're going to restrict those privileges and basically make them the same as everyone else. And you're exactly right. This is 100% confirmed. Boise State has now sued the Mountain West Conference in Idaho court. Now, the one thing I would say, and in my post, I'm making the argument for why the AAC should be making an argument to Boise to join, which is something that I believe that they're probably the strongest G5 brand that we potentially could get. But it still remains to be seen what happens with this Mountain West situation. Like if they come back and they realize, which is true, that Boise is by far their most valuable asset, maybe they'll walk this thing back. But it's something I'm definitely watching very closely right now.
Have you guys heard any more on BYU? I haven't heard any more Boise. I haven't heard maybe one time about BYU, so I figured that would maybe just people speculating two potential people that we could have in. I was saying, JP, that we should, if we had three strong people like that, three strong candidates, we should go ahead and take them and have a 14-team lead to solidify, but not to just take just three teams, just three any like teams to make 14.
That's really, and just to speak on BYU, because it's something I've looked into a decent amount. I've talked to Matt Brown, who's a SB Nation writer, and he also covers some BYU stuff. Very knowledgeable guy. And the problem with BYU is that BYU just signed a new 7-year TV deal with ESPN directly. It's a private school. We don't know exactly how much it's worth, but it's probably at least as much as the AAC is paying, and in likelihood, it might even be more. And what they get to do is they can go play games like USC at home, which their fan base wants. And what they don't get is they can't win a conference championship and they can't take the New Year's Six Bowl bid. My belief, based on what I've been told, is that BYU seems pretty committed to doing what they're doing as an independent. You know, probably some of the schools where you would have more pull, I would expect, would be places like Air Force. I don't think Army's going to be in, but I agree with you. I think that the challenge is, you know, you kind of have to have something, you know, and if you look at why our schools were picked, you know what I mean? It's like Tulane was competitively in a bad place at the time, but you get New Orleans and, you know, it's a good academic school. You get some brand recognition. You look at ECU, you know, the level of, you know, even in during ECU's doldrums, the attendance figures for ECU were still near the top of the G5, right? But then you look at some schools like a Southern Miss, and they don't have a geography, they don't have the financial support or the fan support necessarily, and it's just there's not a lot of good options out there. But I agree, if you could get three good ones, go to 14, you do it. It's just hard figuring out what those three are, in my opinion.
And I know with as far as Air Force, they actually their coach actually was talking about the fact he's not happy with the time zone, the fact of playing a later times when he would love to be able to play teams like at East Carolina, like at Tulane, that's more on the Eastern time zone and Central time zone.
That's one of the more interesting ones. I've talking to some folks, you know, kind of on the Service Academy football side. I've heard Army is going to be really tough because Army still has a bad taste in their mouth from when they were in Conference USA, which went really badly when they were kind of at the bottom competitively. It's interesting because I agree. I think that's Troy Calhoun. I agree with what Air Force is saying of, you know, the Mountain West takes this TV deal, which on the surface has some better money, but the bargain you're making is that ESPN, or I think they're doing it with CBS, is going to put you in these crazy kickoff times where it's like, you know, 8 p.m. or whatever, you know, Mountain time zone. and the whole East Coast is asleep by the second half. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you know, I think that that could be another program that would probably be a more realistic target, in my opinion. So it's interesting. You know, I'm interested to see, I think what Boise does with this situation is going to be the first domino, and then we see what direction it goes after that. That's my guess.
Well, JP, thank you so much for coming on. I could talk to you for hours about conference realignment. We'll definitely have you back on that and much more throughout the year. I enjoyed your the conversation, the visit very much. How can people follow your work?
Yeah, you know, biggest one is if you're on Twitter, check us out at Fear the Wave blog. We have a podcast as well and a newsletter, and we post it through there in case you see anything interesting. But yeah, we'd definitely like to chat with you guys again in the future, and thank you so much for having me.
All right, thanks very much, JP. Appreciate you very much. Hang on, let me do that again. And we got Kyle now. Hey,
yeah.
Kyle.
Hey.
All right, here we go. Thanks very much, JP. Appreciate you very much. As our very own Kyle from the Grange joins us. How are you, man?
What's going on, guys? Just heading back from the rally area on this lovely Saturday.
I guess we could, this is actually perfect timing for Kyle as we can talk now, Bubba. One of the topics we wanted to talk about is the interview. There have been interviewing defensive coordinators, so that would be perfect for us to jump in and talk about that now.
Yeah, glad Kyle's able to join us before we had this discussion. Steve and I go at hoistthecolors.net and was reporting that Blake Carroll, the current defensive coordinator down at Kennesaw State, and then also Chad Staggs, who's the current defensive coordinator at Coastal Carolina. Both of those have interviewed, according to Stephen Igo. So with Blake Carroll, he's a guy that that Coach Houston had a background with at Lenoir Ryan, and then also down at the Citadel. And he's been a defensive coordinator at multiple stops, 5 years at the Citadel, and then also at Kennesaw State for one season after taking over, like I mentioned earlier in the show, for Brian Newberry, who's currently at Navy. So he's someone that Kennesaw State program has been very solid in recent years, and he continued on with what Coach Newberry had been doing, less than 19 points and 280 yards a game and only 88 yards per game on the ground.
Yeah, and also there was a third candidate, Coach, was McCoy, or whatever his last name is, has an extensive background as a defensive coordinator and assistant. Most recently was assistant special teams coordinator for the Arizona Cardinals. Last college stop was at Texas State as defensive coordinator. Was not overly impressed with his resume. I'd be surprised if he gets the job, but who knows. I don't know. Of the three guys we know have interviewed, I guess if I had to choose one, you know, I don't know, Bubba, would you lean who would you lean towards, the gentleman from Kennesaw or the guy down at Coastal? I mean,
I really don't know. I mean, I don't know enough to really be able to have a strong opinion there, yeah. But I do think both are very viable candidates. I mean, not only does Coach Houston have a familiarity with them, but like he obviously just proved, I mean, that's not everything. I mean, you have to certainly be on the same page and believe in what the guy's doing and be in agreement there. But Chad Staggs, I was talking about how Blake Carroll had been a defensive coordinator at multiple stops for, I guess, at least 6 years now. And Chad Staggs, he's been a defensive coordinator for about 11 or 12 years in five different stops. He started off his first defensive coordinator spot, from what I could see, was at North Greenville, Division II program, then down at Delta State, where Cannon Gibbs currently is as a GA. And then you had Charleston Southern. When he was at Charleston Southern, that program went up and knocked App State off as they were transitioning to FBS in 2013. And then prior to Coastal Carolina, where he's just been for one season, if I'm not mistaken. It's either one or two seasons, but I think just one. He had been at Furman for a few years as defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I think both are good. The guy down at Kennesaw who has a very close relationship with Coach Houston, the one thing that was concerning about him, and it's not necessarily a concern, is that, you know, he took over a great defense there at Kennesaw, so it already was established.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Coach Newberry done a heck of a job there, and like we were talking
about. Yeah, we know how good he is, what he did with Navy's defense this year.
Right, and that's something we, before you were able to join this, Kyle, we had mentioned that he was turning down that job at Mississippi State with Mike Leach, which would have been an extreme change for him, going from a ball control, flex bone option offense to being a defensive coordinator with the air raid up-tempo system.
He was offered
system.
That position?
Per Bruce Feldman, I believe it was.
He was offered defensive coordinator, turned it down.
Yeah, I take that back. It was not Bruce Feldman, but it was a reliable source on Twitter said that he had turned that down, yes.
And when was this?
Within the last 24 to 48 hours.
There's your new defensive coordinator at East Carolina, Bubba Rosenbaum.
That sounds good to me.
Oh, wait a minute. Or do you mean the guy at Navy?
The guy, Brian Newberry, the Navy defensive coordinator, turned down the Mississippi State job.
I'm sorry.
Yes,
I thought you were talking about Kennesaw, D.C. I apologize.
No.
I was about to say, well, that's the answer. But, yeah, you're talking about Newberry. Yes. Good for being a country in Monolulu that you got to keep the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, well, hey, I tell you what, we're by the way, can I mention something real quick?
Yeah, we'll let you.
Okay. I want to, because I waited for Kyle for this, because I was hoping that he would, maybe we can get him to do this at some point. But for the last 24 years, we'll come back to ECU just a second. We'll talk to ECU, but come back to ECU Sports in a second. But they had, for the last 24 years at the Student Rec Center, they've had the Polar Bear Challenge. They did it on Thursday night. 800, this is what I'm surprised with, 840 people took the leap. And that's from our friends. I saw the picture from the Daily Reflector. You can see it at reflector.com. Can you, Kyle, would you do that?
Say again, would I do that?
Yeah, the Polar Bear Challenge.
Just for the hell of it?
Yeah, no money involved, reality
the
show.
The Polar Plunge of the ECU Student Rec Center.
Maybe with the right group of people, if I was dared into it, with other group of people, I could see me doing it.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think if you guys did it, like if it was like a purpose, or there was two other guys like you guys, you were saying, "Hey, we're going to do it. You want to do it? I would do it." But just to do it, I don't think, unless I had friends involved, I don't think I would do it.
Yeah, positive pirate peer pressure. That's what.
Yeah. Come on, Junior Kyle. Right now. Come on, man.
Yeah, and they interviewed on EC Athletics. They put a short couple-minute clip out there of Cliff Godwin, and then also Bryson Wall and a couple other players jumping in.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That'll be fun. That was just a fun thing I want to mention. Hey, you want to go to our next guest, Bubba?
Yeah, we caught up with Ron Clements. He is an East Carolina alum, like I mentioned in the open, longtime sports writer, covering the NFL, Major League Baseball, and other topics. So let's go to that conversation right now.
Well, Bubba, I think that one of our favorite guests, he probably has more frequent flyer miles and certainly travel miles than any other guest we've ever had on the show is our next guest.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know how much he's flying, but definitely has traveled the country in an RV multiple times. Welcome into the show, East Carolina alum and veteran sports writer Ron Clements.
How you doing,
Hey, Bubba.
Ron?
Hey, Dave. Good. Doing well.
Glad to have you on. There's so many things we can talk about: basketball, baseball, football, life, a lot of stuff, travel, a lot of great things. Certainly, I guess we could talk about the, when it comes to the Pirates, when we get your thoughts first on Mike Houston, what do you think about the football program, and then we'll transition to, we'll keep it home with Joe Dooley and the Pirates. What do you think so far?
Well, with football, I mean, I still don't know. I think the jury's still out on Mike Houston. Obviously, season one wasn't great. Going 4-8, and two of those wins coming against FCS schools, only because Whit Babcock is a jerk and pulled Virginia Tech out of that rivalry. But that's another thing. I don't know. I mean, unless if they have vast improvement next year, it could just be more of the same. I will say that they did have a pretty darn good recruiting class, so hopefully that'll pay dividends here. And if not 2020, 2021. This is a program that has to get back to bowl games. I think this, the American Athletic Conference finishing with four ranked teams is a darn good conference. That's better than the Pac-12. That's better than the Big 12. That's better than the ACC, which only had Clemson ranked at the end of the season. But the American is a better conference when you've got a traditional program like ECU that's good. It's like it when Texas A&M is good, it makes the SEC and before that the Big 12 better. And not to compare East Carolina to Texas A&M, but it's the first thing that popped into my head because my brother's an A&M grad. And as far as basketball, we talked about this before we came on the air. It's just the talent is there. The consistency is not. You see the talent when they beat a team like SMU, but then they lay an egg the very next game against Tulsa and just kind of like don't show up. And that's probably the most frustrating thing with East Carolina's their basketball team is you see the talent they have and that they have the ability to compete with some of the top-tier programs in the American Athletic Conference, but they're just not doing it night in and night out. And that's frustrating as an alum to watch.
And, Ron, like you say, that's one of those things just historically with East Carolina basketball teams for every good game like that SMU win, going back to the Marquette wins and Louisville win,
right.
back in the Bill Herrien days. I mean, for every win you have like that, you have several, for lack of a better word, turds or laying an egg or however you want to put it. But
that's one of those things.
Empire Nation's gotten jerked around a lot as far as expectations and not delivering on them.
Well, what was it? The 2013-14 season, they started out 8-2 with one of those losses was a 9-point loss at Duke.
Yeah, and that game was much closer than that score indicated.
Right, and we're like, all right, hey, every 21 years, this is what I was thinking in 2014, every 21 years, ECU is going to go to the NCAA tournament, 1972, 1993, 2014 is the year, because in 2013, remember, they actually won the, the CBI or the CIT?
The CIT.
So, okay, this is a program you thought was on the rise. They had that hot start, and then they get into conference play in the American and just lose like their first five or six games in conference, and they finished like 500 that year after such a hot start and being competitive with one of the best teams in the country. That to me is probably just, I really don't remember ECU in 93 going to the NCAA tournament. But I would say since then, that 2013-14 team is probably the most disappointing team I've seen because the expectations were so much higher and then they had the hot start. And it just adds to that frustration. It's like, will they ever put it together? And that's kind of how I feel about the football team too. Since that 10-3 year, are they ever going to get that back? And you see that program trending in the wrong direction, and I hope they can get it turned around.
You know, Ron, with that very fact, you mentioned with a good recruiting class, I really believe the Holton's senior year with all the talent that the guys were freshmen that are now sophomores coming back, I don't think it's next year. I really believe 21 is the breakout year for the Pirates and more like what we call Pirate football.
I hope you're right. Yeah. Taylor's is another guy who's just kind of frustrating to watch because you can see that sometimes he'll make a throw and you're like, wow. And then he'll just miss what should be easy throws. I mean, he's a heck of an athlete. He's a great runner. But just if he can be more consistent as a thrower, the offense, it just opens up so many more things for the offense. But I really don't think skill position is a problem at ECU. We've talked about this before. They've got to get bigger and stronger on the line, on both sides of
right.
the ball. That's where you win ball games, and that's where ECU has been literally pushed around the last few years, is up front on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, no doubt.
Bubba, I know that I was going to mention, I want to throw this one to you, Bubba. Ron, I don't know if you saw it, but basically we've already sent a D-line And then you made a great point, a nice seg there for us with the O-line. We're getting to guys kicked off the team, guys not a part of the program anymore. The O-line all of a sudden has become what seemed to be a problem has become a major problem, right, Bubba?
Well, yeah, Matt Morgan is no longer part of the program. That's per Steven Igo and Hoist of Colors and also 94.3 The Game. Put that out there. But then in addition to Matt Morgan, you also had Cortez Heron, who's one of your most productive and most experienced guys, a guy that missed part of this year with an injury. His future is now somewhat in jeopardy. We'll see what happens. Hopefully he's able to return. But he was recently just – arrested for marijuana, so we'll see. The thing that's the most concerning about it, it said an intent to distribute, so it wasn't, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's more than just, I think that's the one thing I went back and read it again. It's more than just however you feel about marijuana, it is what it is, possession, but it's more than possession when it said intent to sell, right?
Right.
So that's something that's very concerning. But going into the season, we knew the D-line was going to be really thin, Ron, and now it looks like potentially the O-line. You better get some grad transfers, something we can get in there. Yeah, exactly. Guys off the street, something that we can get that have some eligibility left.
Yeah, one of those guys that we really need to sign, his highly regarded JUCO kid, Emilio Moran. He was there visiting here in the last few days and seemed to really enjoy his visit. So hopefully we'll end up signing him.
So if you're listening, if you're a 6'5", 320-pound offensive lineman and you're undecided on where you want to finish your college career, Greenville, North Carolina, not a bad place, just saying.
And if you're a true freshman, you can start right now, right?
Yeah.
I get a lot of playing time, and that maybe that's the selling point that we can have for both O-line and D-line. Also, I want to ask you, Ron, about I know you're a baseball guy. What do you think about the Pirates as far as it was hard to believe? Media day today for East Carolina baseball, just a couple weeks away, and we've got baseball season. It's hard to believe that it's already here.
Yeah, and I'm in Arizona right now, and in the Phoenix area, and we're going to be checking out some spring training games while we're here, because that's like pitchers and catchers are going to be reporting in like 2 weeks. So, but I don't know. I was kind of surprised to see ECU coming in at 25th in the preseason polls. I thought based on previous years that they'd be a little higher. I do realize they lost a lot. That's another program. It's just like they're so good. Whenever I run into East Carolina grads, by the way, there is an East Carolina student who is in her second year as an intern for the Milwaukee Brewers here for spring training. I can't remember her name, but I met her. She saw my phone, and she pulled out her phone, and we had the same exact East Carolina skins on our phone. I thought that was kind of funny. So Pirate Nation is everywhere. But anyway, it's a program that's been knocking on the door for Omaha for the last few years, and I don't know what they need to do to get over the hump. I thought last year was going to be the year, but then Louisville just blew the doors off of them. So I don't know. Hopefully it happens, and when it happens, you guys can find me in Omaha, because I've been kind of putting off a trip to Omaha until East Carolina gets there, and I hope I don't have to wait like forever.
Well, Ron, you can when it does happen. You can count on seeing us there with you in Omaha.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Othello Manos has promised former basketball great. He's promised that he's from there in Omaha. He's going to throw a big party, so you'll definitely be invited, Ron.
Sweet.
And we'll save a table for you, seat at the table.
And Dave,
I appreciate that.
Kind of a good segue in talking about a tremendous venue there at TD Ameritrade Stadium. Ballpark there in Omaha. Here recently, Ron was out in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl. And Ron, tell our listeners about that.
Last week, the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl was played Saturday, but then they had a week of practices at the Rose Bowl, and I was there all week. No East Carolina. I don't think ECU had any players at any All-Star game this year. But Philip Nelson was at the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl a few years ago. But I had only been to the Rose Bowl once before, and that was for a Cal-UCLA game, and that was very, very recently. That was the end of November, last week of the regular season for college football. It was my first ever trip to the Rose Bowl. But went back. Cool place. And going up to the press box, it's the Keith Jackson Memorial Press Box, and his likeness is all over. It's on the elevators. It's on the pictures on the walls. There's a statue of Keith Jackson outside of the Rose Bowl. If you're a college football fan, you ever watched the Rose Bowl game or just any Pac-12 game or any game on ABC, like the midday Saturday afternoon game, you know who Keith Jackson is and what a legend he was. And I tweeted out a picture of the Keith Jackson statue, and I was like, whoa, Nelly, it's Keith Jackson. Because, I mean, he was a legend. He was one of the best.
Now, Ron, a player that I know you did a feature on was a Division II player from Pittsburgh State, a cornerback. Is it Keontae Harden?
Yeah,
tell us about that young man. And before you get started, I know the Pittsburgh State mascot is one of the coolest. Just ask Mike Leach and Gorillas.
Yeah, the only Gorillas in the NCAA. And yeah, that's a program that produced John Brown, the Buffalo Bills receiver, formerly of the Arizona Cardinals. But Harden has he's better than a D2 level player because he started out at Minnesota. He was part of that that sex scandal there where the woman claimed that multiple players sexually assaulted her, and some of the players were reinstated. Harden got expelled from Minnesota, though. I really don't know why he was singled out. And when I asked him about it, he just gave me a no comment. But he's a good player. And Hugh Jackson coached the American team there, the team that Harden was on. And Jackson very, very high on him. He said, absolutely, this kid can play in the NFL. He's about 5'10", 180-some pounds. Had a really good week of practice out there. Didn't really get many opportunities to make a play in the game because he just didn't have very many balls that went his way. But, he's a good player. I don't know. He was never charged with a crime at Minnesota, I'll say this. So he still might be able to get an invite to the combine. The NFL changed that. If you have, like, a sexual misconduct charge or assault charge or something like that, you're not eligible to go to the combine. Harden was expelled from Minnesota, but he was never charged with anything. So you might see him in Indianapolis. Those invites have not been released yet. And when I asked him if he has gotten an invite to the combine, he had not yet. So we'll see. But I will say another Division II player who probably had the best week of anybody there was from Greenville, South Carolina. Chauncey Haney went to University of North Greenville. He's a 6'4", 250-pound defensive end, and he looks like a Greek statue because he's just chiseled. And this is a guy who is athletic. One of the scouts there said that he has all the tools to play in the NFL, but his technique is all messed up. So you put a kid like that who is a superb athlete and fast and strong on the practice squad for a year, there's someone who can make some noise in the NFL. So look for the name Chauncey Haney. If he goes to the combine, he's going to kill it because he's such a good athlete.
Something else you had a neat opportunity to do here within the last couple weeks or so is Grand Canyon University. If you follow college athletics, and you've probably heard of them at least, but the Antelopes right there in Phoenix. When I think about my childhood and watching NBA basketball, one of the names just Thunder Dan Marley, and well, the GCU Antelopes are coached by Thunder Dan, and so they have quite a arena and quite a student section, right?
That is probably the most fun I've ever had at a college basketball game, and it has nothing to do with the game between California Baptist and Grand Canyon University. It's the student. I mean, well, you know how, like, you go to a game, any college game, football, basketball, baseball, soccer, whatever. If there's any kind of outside activities going on, the students will kind of wait until the game starts, and then they'll kind of shuffle in slowly. Maybe by the end of the first quarter, the entire student section is filled, right? At a lot of venues, that's very, very common.
late arriving student crowd. Well, at Grand Canyon University, 30 minutes before tip-off, the student section was filled, and they were already rowdy. They were loud. They were doing choreographed cheers and hand movements and jumping. And the press box there is right above the student section. And when they start jumping, the whole press box shakes. And, oh, my God, it's so much fun. I tweeted video of that out, and I was like, this is the best student section in the country. My brother-in-law, who is a Duke grad, took exception to that. He's like, that they're just copying the Cameron crazies. Now, I've never been to Cameron Arena, so full disclosure, there's my disclaimer, but going to a game at Grand Canyon University is the most fun I've ever had at a college basketball game, and it was all about the students. They did a crowd surfing thing. It was a crowd surfing race, actually, where they started at 5 seconds. So first of all, the student section is 5 sections across the baseline underneath the press box, and they chose to put the students on that side instead of one of the ends on the baseline behind the goal where you see at a lot of schools where the student section is back there so they can distract people shooting free throws or whatever. But Grand Canyon University wanted to highlight its student section, so they put them on the sideline beneath the press box because that's the way the cameras are facing. So that way their rowdy student section is on television. But they started these kids, they had one student at the bottom of the, on the floor, and at the whistle or the whatever it was, the horn, they passed this person up the section to the top of the section, and whichever section won, you know, won the crowd surfing race, and I don't know what the prize was other than bragging rights, but I don't think I've ever seen that at a basketball game before. There was they introduced their new women's basketball coach, and he was coming from University of Missouri, Kansas City, and he's a big University of Kansas fan. And I was like, how does this compare to Lawrence? And he goes, oh my God, this is so much wilder. And that wasn't to slam on Lawrence. That was just, I mean, if you're in Phoenix during the winter or the spring, go to a GCU game. You won't regret it.
Shifting gears from college athletics to the NFL, that's something you're very familiar with and have written about for more than a decade. So what are your thoughts on some of the coaching changes? Ron Rivera being hired by the Redskins, and then a very intriguing hire by the Panthers with Matt Rhule, and touch on those and some of the others.
Well, first of all, Ron Rivera is one of my favorite people. When I first moved to Charlotte to work at Sporting News in 2014, I went to the NFL Combine in February of 2015, and I'm at the airport, and Ron Rivera was there. He was supposed to be on He was going to be on the same flight, but then our flight ended up getting delayed. But anyway, I introduced myself to Ron, and he was like, oh, hey, welcome to Charlotte. And then he saw Bill Voth, who he's Panthers Bill on Twitter, and says, hey, do you know Bill Voth? And he walked me over and introduced me to Bill Voth, who was working in TV at the time. And that's just the kind of person Ron Rivera is. He was just so nice, so friendly. Saw him at the movie theater once. A couple years later, he's not pretentious at all. There's no ego to that guy. Well, I mean, there's a little bit of ego to that guy because you have to have some kind of command presence, do you, when you're an NFL head coach? But he's such a good guy. I wish him all the best in Washington. He's a heck of a football coach. Unfortunately, in Carolina, things were kind of going in the wrong direction, and they decided to make a change. As far as Matt Rhule, when you hire a college coach to come to the NFL, it's always – has mixed results, so we'll see how he does. Matt Rhule's a good coach. He's proven that wherever he's been, he's improved the program. So we'll see if he can continue that trend with his first professional head coaching job. And then you got Mike McCarthy down in Dallas, 9 times going to the playoffs in 13 years with the Packers, but I've never been a Mike McCarthy fan. I think the Packers won a lot of the times in spite of Mike McCarthy because they had a guy like Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. Mike McCarthy's a hell of a game planner. He'll put together an excellent game plan, but if it doesn't work, he's not a very good game manager, and his in-game adjustments are pretty much non-existent. So there's three of the coaching hires.
Before we shift gears to baseball, what do you think about the decision the Giants made to bring in longtime New England Patriots staffer Joe Judge?
I think it was kind of a surprise because this guy's he's not a coordinator. You know, you think of like head coaching jobs as like taking steps. You're an assistant, then you're a coordinator, and then you're a head coach. Well, he was a position coach, and now he's a head coach. And so that's kind of like being a college coach when it comes to results. It's always mixed. Some guys have been successful, but I think for the most part, those guys who make that jump from position coach to head coach really don't have the success that guys who have been coordinators have had. So I don't know. With Eli Manning retiring, it's obviously the Daniel Jones show now there in New York, New Jersey. So I don't wish any ill will on Coach Judge, but you know it remains to be seen how successful he's going to be. And the Giants are a mess right now, and so he's got a lot of work to do there.
Kind of shifting gears from football to baseball, with everything that's been going on in Major League Baseball with the Astros and some other organizations, what are your thoughts on that?
I really don't care about the Astros and the whole cheating thing because I remember when I was playing baseball and football in high school, our coaches would tell us, look, we should be able to tell what the other team, the other players, what we are going to do and still be able to execute it. And that's what it's all about. It's all about execution. I don't care if the batter knows that a curveball's coming. He still has to hit it. Or, you know, or if someone knows the other team's going to steal a base, you still got to make that throw. You still got to make that throw accurately. You still have to apply the tag. You know, errors happen on routine ground balls. So the catcher still has to make that throw down to second base, and that's not an easy throw to make. If you know, even if you know someone's going to be stealing. So I don't think, like, people are saying the Astros World Championship or World Series Championship is tainted. I don't think so. They still won the games. We all saw it. It doesn't change a thing. Should they have been punished? Sure. And I'm glad they were. But people talking about stripping them of their World Series championship. The Los Angeles City Council wants the Dodgers to be named 2017 World Series champs because they got cheated out of it, according to the LA City Council. I mean, stuff like that is ridiculous. I really don't care because if you're stealing signs, because you still have to make the plays.
Ron, last thing before we let you go, you've been very generous with your time, kind of shifting gears back to the college scene. What do you think about what Coach Ed Orgeron and company were able to accomplish down on the Bayou this year? Just remarkable. And then, of course, you had Joe Brady leaving to join Matt Rhule's staff in Carolina, going back to the NFL, and you had so many pieces from this run moving on. So it's certainly going to be interesting in 2020 to see how things go at LSU.
Well, if you don't feel good about Ed Orgeron winning a national championship at LSU after what happened to him at USC, then you have something wrong with you as a human, because that was a great moment for him. You could tell just by looking at him and seeing the tears in his eyes how happy he was to accomplish that at LSU. And Brady was a hell of a hire for Matt Rhule. So that I've talked about, you know, how college coaches sometimes struggle when they go to the NFL. Well, that definitely will help Matt Rhule and that Panthers offense. Of course, the biggest question there is what are they going to do with Cam Newton? But, and then Joe Burrow, you kind of have to feel bad for him because he's probably going to be a Cincinnati Bengal, but, you know, he'll be paid handsomely, so I don't feel too bad for him. I think the whole debate all season was who's the best team in college football, LSU, Clemson, or Ohio State. And those were clearly the three best teams in college football in 2019. And LSU proved that they were the best team. There's no controversy this year like we've had the last couple of years with the college football playoff. Would it have been nice if Memphis got into the playoff instead of Oklahoma? Sure. But that's probably a good thing for Memphis and the rest of the American Athletic schools or the other so-called Group of Five schools, because Oklahoma getting thumped like that by LSU is one thing, but if it happens to a school like Memphis or UCF or whoever, or Boise State or whoever else, then the anti-Group of Five people or the Power Five elitists would point to that and be like, see, that's why they don't belong. Well, I'm wondering if they're going to tell the Big 12 that they don't belong because Oklahoma got thumped. And obviously we know that's not the case. That nobody's going to say that, so... probably a good thing that Memphis got left out of the college football playoff, even though they were probably, they should have been in the conversation for it, but it doesn't change the fact that, to me, UCF is the 2017 national champs.
Let's wrap this up with something from the non-sports realm.
Getting long-winded.
No problem. I was going to say the reason I said it like that is because a moment ago I told you that would be the final question, but I just got to thinking. I like the plug you had for our national park system in the United States. So with your many travels over the last several months, so tell us, do you have a good story you can share from one of the many beautiful parks or ballparks or what have you that you've been to?
Well, the national park system is the best in the world, and I've met a guy from England who was traveling to the various national parks in the U.S. with his wife in their camper van, and these guys actually shipped their camper van to different countries. They've been to 47 countries. I'm like, holy cow, we've been to 44 states with the RV. You've been to 47 countries. That's incredible. But he even complimented the national park system we have in the U.S. So, I mean, if you have an opportunity to go to a national park or just anything run by the National Park Service, like the Cape Hatteras National Seashore there is maintained by the National Park Service, do it because it's the best in the world. It's the envy of other countries. I recently went to Joshua Tree National Park in California on our way back from Los Angeles to Phoenix, and you know, it's a cool place. And they all are. Mammoth Cave in Kentucky, the Everglades. I haven't been down there yet, but I want to get there. Now, I've not been to Yellowstone or Denali in Alaska or Glacier National Park in Montana, but those are on the list for 2020. But so far, the parks we've been to, Yellowstone is the most beautiful place in the world I've ever seen. Yellowstone's unbelievable, but be warned, the bison roadblocks are a real thing. We encountered a couple of them where you just have to wait and let the bison get off the road.
They are. Unfortunately, I was unable to attend, but back in, 2015, when the Pirates played out in Provo, my parents made it a 5 or 6 day vacation, and them and some friends were victim of one of those roadblocks, like you said. They sent me a picture with tens of bison crossing the road.
Mm-hmm. And heck, speaking of Utah, I mean, that whole state is like one giant national park with Bryce Canyon and Arches and Canyonlands and Zion. So I'm looking forward to getting to Utah this year. Utah is one of the five states we have yet to take the RV to. So that's our 2020 travel plan, is to get to Nevada, Utah, Alaska, Iowa, and Louisiana in the RV. So that's what we have planned for 2020 with Home Run on Wheels.
Yeah, having seen pictures and video of that area of the country, I can't wait to someday when I'm hopefully able to travel out there. But
it's beautiful.
It was something I know my wife had the opportunity to do back in her high school years, and it's something we have on the bucket list for sure. But anyway, Ron, it's been great catching up, talking a variety of topics, sports and otherwise, and we certainly appreciate your time, and we look forward to having you back on here in the coming weeks.
Thanks, Bubba. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you very much, Ron. Appreciate him very much. Great interview. He is one of my favorites. I tell you what, he's ECU alum, Sporting News. But he's actually been somebody that's been really good to us. I appreciate him. Want to bring in Kyle about, we talked about it earlier in the show, about Boise State. And I wanted to bring you in, Kyle, because it's one of the hottest topics and for ECU and the American. And I want to get your thoughts on, do you think Boise's coming our way?
I think it's possible. Whenever you're suing your conference, I'm sure they're going to try to get things worked out with Boise, but Boise seems pretty steadfast on this. It's also going to depend, I think, on what the TV partner with the Mountain West says. If they say they don't care if they lose Boise because ESPN's getting a lot of their games anyway, then I don't know. You know, will they be able to reach some kind of amicable agreement? And then Boise going to have to decide, that, you know, are they better off independent? I wouldn't think so. Are they better off joining the American? I really don't see any other choices for them besides those two. In my opinion, if they're going to join the American, unless they're going to come football only and then put the rest of their sports like in the West Coast League or the West Coast Conference, whatever it's called, I think we need to go to 14 and push the hands of the five to let us in as an autonomous league. If you could get Boise to come, if you could get BYU to come, and then say Air Force, you got 14 teams. You suddenly have taken the and put them in the American. And if you're telling me that league, the winner between UCF, Cincinnati, Memphis, Carolina, Temple, Boise State, BYU, Air Force, SMU, Houston. If you're telling me the two teams are going to play through that league, then play a conference championship game, and they're not worthy of a New Year's Six ball every year, and if they go undefeated through that, not worthy of a playoff spot, you can kiss my ass.
Absolutely.
No doubt about it. And they need to – that's one thing they need to do is look at that very thing about – I think Commissioner Resco is they're going to definitely do that. And Boise actually would be better off if they do come our way, because we're making so much more money. They'll make more money per school.
Well, that's the whole thing. They had their own separate television deal. And,
right.
Mount West wants to end that, because at the next TV negotiations, then Boise would be part of the conference negotiations, and it would help the TV money. So I don't blame the Mount West one bit. I think Boise is being unfair to their conference mates, to be honest. But, you know, but if we ain't going to go, there's some conversations that need to be had. If we're just going to add Boise, then we just add Boise. If we're going to go to 14, we also need to talk to ESPN. If we're going to go to 14, we're going to need to renegotiate our TV contract because we're going to need more money. If you just add Boise, you add Boise and everything equal. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'd be shocked if there wasn't conversations between Mike Orasco and Boise State at this point.
Oh, there's no question about it, Kyle. I definitely think with Boise State, they're such a brand name. And, you know, I was telling Bubba earlier, Kyle, you could obviously make an argument if you're in the Mountain West, you better be careful for doing this, because they could come in and the American could come in and take a few teams out of literally out of the Mountain West, and the conference is gone. I mean, it's not gone, but
I don't think you could take one, just take Air Force and BYU, as we said, and then you're taking two teams from the Mountain West, and the Mountain West survives, but they kind of are what they are. But we'll see how it plays out. If we can get that done and get autonomy status, get a bigger TV contract, then bam, we're a power league.
No question about it. And that's the question there is, that's the thing. Do you shout to the rooftops if you're, I mean, I know that people laughed at Commissioner Resco for, the P6 argument. But the funny thing about the whole thing was the Big East was a part of the, you know, there was six conferences that were
BCS, yeah.
The BCS. And I know this is a new era, but it's not like this league that all of a sudden, yeah, they're new members and a lot of Conference USA folks and all that, but the league has done very well in every sport. I mean, we've been beating quote-unquote Power 5 teams, so I believe that unless some miracle happens, the commissioner from the Mountain West is in a difficult position. He's trying to take up for the league. He's trying to take up for the other 11 members, but yet your most popular or the biggest one especially football is concerned, Boise State.
Well, it'd be interesting to see they have that Texas stroke. Texas played these cards with the Big 12, and except for somebody like, you know, we're going to be interested to see, you know, do they end up letting Boise get their way and then does somebody like Air Force say, screw it, and then I'm leaving, like what Texas A&M did when Texas got their way and the Big 12 ended up staying together, but then A&M and Missouri took their ball and went somewhere else because Texas got to have their own, you know, money in the network and all.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, do you guys, I mean, this is a question I had for both of you. I'm saving it for the podcast now. Do you think, don't you think that we have a shot to renegotiate if you bring in a Boise especially, but then if you added a few more teams, don't you think you can renegotiate and maybe we can get more per team, more per school?
Well, that's what I was just talking about earlier, Dave. Those are conversations you have before you add. You don't add Boise. Well, you add Boise. So if we go to 12, we go to 12. But if you go to 14, you got to renegotiate. And you have those conversations beforehand. You talk to ESPN and say, look, if we can get these other two to come with and get to 14, you know, do we renegotiate our TV deal? You talk to the Power 5 League, look, if we get these three to join, will that give us autonomy status? And once you have more money from your TV contract and get autonomy status, you're a power league. I mean, that's the requirements. So,
very exciting, and certainly I know the powers that be. This could potentially be the start. What's amazing with this Boise State, I was thinking about this yesterday afternoon. This could be the start of another realignment, guys. If maybe not. And maybe nothing, it could be too much ado about nothing, but it also could be like some dominoes falling, don't you think?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, if we were going to go to 14, which, you know, to this point has been nothing but message board fodder, but yeah, if you go to 14, or even if we just say Boise, you know, does the Mountain West sit at 11, or do they add, say, UTEP and go back to 12? If they lose two and they're at 10, do they sit at 10, or do they want to go back to 12 and add UTEP and somebody else? I mean, so, you know, in terms of the so-called group of five level, yeah, it could, some other dominoes could fall, sure. I don't think it's going to affect anything above, in terms of the 12 or anything.
Right, and that's the one thing we got to look for. We got to keep our eyes on it. And certainly, I know, Bubba, we're trying to work on the story, and I know that you have do we have a guest coming up with Boise?
Still trying to line that up, but okay. We may be having B.J. Raines. He's the Boise State beat writer. He may be coming on the show. Still trying to work that out.
All right, we'll do that. And I know that we have the 23 Jungle Tales coming up. A lot of those are every single day on SoundCloud. The baseball season is almost upon us. Basketball is going we'll have that game tonight, and hopefully we can get off the losing streak, three straight, and you know what? I'm still a believer in Dooley and kind of keep working at this thing, and hopefully the Pirates can get a big win. I'm hoping to see, like you said, Bubba, earlier, 5,300. I know it was going to be hard to beat tonight, but then again, it's a 6 o'clock game on a Saturday night. What else is there to do in Greenville, North Carolina? Come on out and get your tickets. You can actually walk up and get the tickets, ecupirates.com. You can call 1-800-DOLLY-ECU. I'm sure you can buy your tickets, so hopefully folks will do that. And I know, Kyle, we're going to have to get you to a game pretty soon. You can even sit with Bubba in the bleachers. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
He sounds so excited. Well, when they start winning, he'll show up. So that's the way Pirate Nation
basketball
is.
Basketball's his name on sport, Bubba, or Dave.
Dave. The reason his reaction was what it was is he was having flashbacks to what you said last year about the Menchie's Maniacs passing him around the lower bowl.
All right. Well, he better be some strong son of bitches.
Oh my gosh, that's fun. I'm always opening myself up but that's what makes the show so great. no doubt about it. Before we go, we got one final thing, and I'm gonna put. I don't think Kyle saw this, but they actually had a thing on Facebook, and I know Bubba knows where I'm going with this. This is actually your presidential campaign slogan. Did you see this, Kyle?
Halfway read it. What was it? Your name, the year, and the last thing you said to your pet?
Yeah, so for me, obviously it'd be my name, David, and 2020, the last thing I said to my cat, Princess, this morning as I was telling her how sweet she is. So I guess Prince's "You Are Very Sweet" or something like that would be the last thing.
So David Richmond 2020, Prince's "You Are Very Sweet." That's your campaign slogan.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, mine would be Kyle Barber 2020, "You Better Be Good."
That's actually not bad. What about you, Bubba?
That's what mine would be, Bubba 2020, and get out of the way, Duanye. and oh, yes, folks, thanks to my 8-year-old son who loved Duanye Williams Sutton when he was playing for the Pirates a couple years ago. He thought that was the coolest name, and then he said he's going to have a dog named Duanye. So when my wife got this cat to outside cat to just to deter mice and so forth, he said, "Can we name him Duanye?" I said, "Sure."
Yeah,
that sounds like a song.
Cat named Duanye?
Yeah, we can make that.
My dog, I didn't say my dog's name. I didn't say her name, but I thought you better be good. I'll explain mine as you guys explain yours. It's Nikki, and she's a lab German Shepherd mix, and she has a habit of not behaving when we're not at home sometimes.
Yeah.
Being mischievous, and mm-hmm. So we were leaving this morning, so I told her she better be good while we were gone.
It sounds like the Tina Turner song, "You Better Be Good to Me." So, but anyway, guys, definitely looking forward to a big week for certainly for the Pirates, and no doubt about with Pirate Nation, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. And here pretty soon, yeah, go ahead, Bubba.
Tonight's overtime. We'll have Mike Steele on the show.
That's right. So make sure you listen to that. I was going to say, too, we got a big promotion we'll be announcing in the next week or two. So make sure that you, it's going to be about 2 months long. So I can't wait for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And it's definitely worth listening to this podcast, even without promotions, but certainly with the big promotion we're going to be doing coming up very, very soon. Do you guys have anything before we wrap this up?
You know, I keep thinking in the back of my mind, there was something I wanted to say the next time we record. But since it kind of caught me off guard here with calling in the middle of the podcast, because I didn't even realize we were recording all night, so I'm glad I called. But whatever it is, it'll be on the next podcast.
All right. You'll remember it by then in the next couple of days for sure. All right. Bubba, do you have anything?
Just check out 23 Jungle Tales. And again, that's SoundCloud only. So if you listen via other platforms, that's great, and we certainly appreciate it. But as far as the 23 Jungle Tales, you'll need to go to SoundCloud to check that out. And certainly follow us there. That way, when we post new content, be it the 23 Jungle Tales or other podcasts, then you'll be alerted, and you'll know when those are available. And since we were already right there around 130 followers, but we've already gained probably at least 6 or 7 followers since this series began. So,
yeah, and guys, I think as I suggested after we're done with 26 hours, I think the hard problem is 2 or 3 podcasts and put them on all platforms.
That sounds good. We can do that. No question about it. That we'll do that here. I guess as soon as the season starts, we can release them, and that'll be awesome. All right, guys. Well, we've had a really long show, so we'll wrap things up. And we had great guests for Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum. I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.